He's the chief sports writer at the Sydney Morning Herald. It's Wednesdays with Andrew Webster.
Have we got a bit to talk about this morning? G'day, Webby.
G'day, Matty. I tell you what we should be talking about. I just saw it on the TV before. Do you know that KFC are increasing their prices by 1% to 2%?
Now, I saw a little bit of this, but I was a little bit deeper into the world of sport than the old KFC. By 1% to 2%.
That's not cool, KFC. Nah. Not cool.
Is that across the board, or is it for certain items only?
I'm not certain on the details. I just saw it on the Today Show. Right. But I have seen it elsewhere reported today. A 1% to 2% increase.
And do you think the old classic double whammy is at play, where the prices are going up, but the size of the burgers and the chooks are going down?
Well, it depends. There's nothing worse. Mm. Look, it's my hangover go-to, the KFC.
Is it?
Five-piece meal. But there's nothing worse than when they just give you like a wing and a leg and a wing. That's not how it goes. That's not how it should be, KFC. Mm.
Yeah,
maybe they'll cut back on the 11 secret herbs and spices and just put, say, 7 in.
Perhaps.
To save
Colonel
money.
Sanders would be turning in his grave. There you go. We've kicked off with the big issues today. What is your hangover go-to?
KFC.
There you go. KFC.
KFC, you know, to start with.
When I started out in this game, Webby, and being a newspaper journo, you'll appreciate this. When I started out in this game as a copy boy at the good old Manly Daily, one of my first jobs was to go up, especially on a Monday morning, up the road and get hot chips just absolutely drowned in vinegar and a can of Coke for the journo of the day who was hungover. So that was one of my first jobs in the gig.
Solo. Cans of Solo.
Ooh, cans of Solo.
If you're working... But see, I don't get hungover anymore, Matt.
No, well, that's what happens when you just keep on going.
Well, when you get older, I've realised how did the world exist with hangovers without you Uber Eats or Netflix? How do we survive?
Yes. How did we get through it? We just toughed it out. That's right. I know. I'm the same as you. If I'm feeling hungover, I know I'm hungover if I walk past somebody who's smoking and it makes me feel sick straight away. Okay. So that's the absolute kicker. Well, let's throw it out there, listeners. Hangover feed, hangover recovery, what's your go-to? We've now established the reason why you were so concerned about the 1% to 2% increase at KFC was that the day after the night before, it's going to cost you more to get back on track. Now, let's get this on track. State of Origin game number two. Had some fun yesterday. I've been hosting Brekkie the last couple of days, and we did a bit of a centre coaching conundrum for Freddie Fittler because he's got an embarrassment of riches, Webby, when it comes to game three, or does he?
Well, look, I think he has no choice but to retain Matt Burton. I don't even think it's a discussion, to be perfectly honest. I think it's all about timing. It's all about sliding doors moments. Matt Burton was given his chance in Origin 2 and was among the best players on the field, if not the best player on the field, alongside Cleary and Tedesco and Coruscant and a whole stack of New South Wales players, to be perfectly honest. Jack Whiten didn't play because of COVID. I don't know where... Look, if you're going to fit either Wyden or Latrell Mitchell into the side, they have to be at left centre, and I don't think they deserve to be there ahead of Matt Burton, given what he did in Game 2. Why would you change a winning formula? Jack Whiten can only play on the left, really. Left foot, left-handed, holds the ball in his left hand, and a left-foot kicker. Latrell maybe could play on the right a little bit, but I still think he's more devastating at left centre and fullback, which he's not going to obviously be picked up because of Tedesco. He's underdone. And they're not as desperate as they were going into game two when if he was available, I would have picked Latrell in a heartbeat. Matt Burton is just, he's in Queensland's head, as Andrew John said to me earlier today. And I just think that's a no-brainer for Brad Fittler, and I expect him to go that way when the team's named on Sunday.
So do you think that's the key when you look at... So let's take Latrell out of this conversation. When you look at Burton v. Whiten on that left-hand side, as you mentioned, Whiten can only play there. Do you think the key is that while he was outstanding in Game 1 and Burton was outstanding in Game 2, Burton's outstanding in a winning team and has the flexibility to be able to move around and has that boot as well. So is that sort of the argument leaning towards Matt Burton? And
why would you change
to Joey's point, he's in their head. Keep him in their head.
Exactly, but why would you change a winning team? They won by 32 points. Like, I just wouldn't be... I wouldn't be tinkering with it too much. There's not really anything that can be should be changed, to be perfectly honest. Like, there's talk about, like, Stephen Crichton, his position maybe being in danger because Ponga got around him that set up that try for Munster. Again, I don't know if you tinker with a winning side. I haven't spoken to Freddie at length about what he's thinking for Game 3, but I'd be surprised if there's any changes at all, unless they're forced by injury.
What about Queensland? Can you see any changes there?
Depends,
I mean,
again.
Dane Gagai.
Yeah, I heard him talking about this earlier on breakfast. It's a very, let's just see how strong the Queensland pick and stick ethos is. I think Dane Gagai deserves to stay there just on what he's done for Queensland in the past. It's a totally different game up there at Suncorp. A decider. That's why New South Wales have only won two deciders at Lang Park / Suncorp in the whole history of State of Origin football, because it's very, very hard to do. And if New South Wales think that they can just roll on from what happened in Perth into what's going to happen in Brisbane, then they'll probably get their bottoms spanked. And not in the way that you're probably thinking out there. I know where people's minds are going. I'd be surprised if they made wholesale changes. They might have to with Ponga. He's had two concussions in three matches, so it depends on how he responds to the layoff from Newcastle before the team's picked at the weekend. And also, what's going on with Munster's shoulder, which is a pretty concerning sign. He won't be playing tomorrow night for the Storm against Manly, so they might have to make some changes.
Yeah, and they'd be big changes as well. What did you make of the officiating? So the 10 minutes in the sin bin, I was okay with that. And in fact, just before Ashley Klein raised his hands, I was shouting at the telly, it's got to be 10 in the bin. And I think so was the entire New South Wales team along the way. The forward pass, I think, you know, I mean, really, that was forward. But there was much more space around the ruck in the 10 metres, especially at the start of the match. Did you see a noticeable change in game two?
No, all I saw was Ashley Klein actually sticking to the rules. And, like, I went back and looked at that 5 minutes just before half time that led to the Kafusi sin bin. I wrote about it in the Herald yesterday. There was one ruck infringement with Harry Grant, which was probably 50-50. But the other two were blatant offside, which I thought Queensland were doing throughout the whole first half. They were racing up off their line like you wouldn't believe. They've got this thing where Cherry Evans on one side and Munster on the other come up early, and they put pressure on the outside backs come up early. They were jumping off their line, off the try line, so early that it wasn't funny. So I reckon there was actually set restarts that Ashley Klein didn't pick up in that lead up to Kafusi being sin bin. As for the Kafusi incident, people, I don't understand what's going on. Go back and look at it. Like, I mean, he's leaning with his shins into Junior Paulo's head as he's trying to get up and play the ball with two other Queensland defenders on him. And then he still sort of leans down, and then he jumps on his back and has a second effort. And then he sort of goes down on his back again and has a third effort. That is a professional foul any day of the week, and 10 in the bin. And this whole line that, well, you can't because it's Origin, what a load of rubbish. Mate, the rules are the rules. I just hate this whole idea that, you know, there's one set for Origin and one set for the NRL. So it's a different game the way it's played, but if we start having different interpretations for different forms of the game, then that's where it gets messy. And that's what leads to people saying, oh, well, it didn't happen here. It didn't happen in Origin, so why is it happening here? Like, yeah, I was completely comfortable with the way Ashley Klein officiated the game. And it's not because I'm not looking at it through a New South Wales lens. I'm just looking at it in terms of what's fair and what's not. So even when the referee sticks to the rules, he gets bagged. So why would you want to be a whistleblower, honestly?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Game one, so Queensland win it through the middle, dominating the ruck and getting away with everything there. So they win game one that way. Game two, there's a whole stack of reasons I think you could pinpoint why New South Wales won and blew it away in the end. Jake Trbojevic, a massive difference up the middle, but the combinations and selections were spot on. So what happens in game three? Where do you think game three is won or lost?
That's the conundrum, isn't it? I thought Coruscant was unbelievable. The way he started that game, not just in terms of what he was doing at a dummy half, but also defensively, he was very, very strong. It's obviously advantage New South Wales, but we saw this again in 2020. It just depends on how much Queensland can bounce back from what happened in Perth. Matt, the way this series has gone, it is a true Origin series. Unlike last year, it was a little bit funky because all the games were in Queensland and New South Wales blew them off the park so easily in those first two games. It didn't feel like Origin. This certainly feels like Origin. A state of Origin. Played by Origin players with Origin moments.
And Origin coaches.
And Origin coaches.
Yeah, everything's on the line going to game three. Just before we get to the news, now on the other side of the news, I want to talk to you about a whole range of issues, including Nick Kyrgios, because we quite often discuss him at length and we've got plenty to talk to him. But what used to happen in the dressing room used to stay in the dressing room, Webby. Doesn't these days. Cameras are everywhere and Victor Radley's going to be in a bit of trouble.
I don't think he is. I think he's going to get a stern talking to from Andrew Abdo. He's going, do not do those hand gestures to Joseph Suwali when there's cameras in there. I'm assured by all concerned that he didn't know that the cameras are on him. That he didn't know. He should have known there's cameras in there. It's a half out of 10 in terms of
scandal
for me. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't even rate a mention.
He's a knockabout.
Scandalometer.
It's silly. He probably should have known, but, you know, if we're going to take cameras into the sanctity of the dressing room, you know, you've got to be prepared for things to be seen.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. And you're right, you know, as if the players are sitting there constantly thinking about the cameras being in the corner, they're thinking about the environment that they're in, the people that they're around.
My highlight of the whole inside the dressing room after the game incident was where they were talking about, you know, the elitism of the New South Wales players, and there's Jake Trbojevic shotgunning a beer right in the middle of the player circle. Now, that is an elite player.
Yeah,
with Matt Burton in the corner, Burton in the corner, vomiting his froth from the beer that he tried to chug. How good!
And you reckon they were looking for KFC the next morning? Yeah. Righto, time for the news. Plenty to chat about on the other side. What to do with Nick Kyrgios? Now, I just don't know where to start. I mean, I do like the entertainment factor. I get the fact that he's not really into tennis. You and I have butted heads about whether or not he's representing Australia or not. But he comes out with a performance overnight that had the lot, including spitting towards some fans. And then it seems to me that he's got a very big hang-up about two things, respect or disrespect and social media. What do we do?
I've taken the same mindset as James Magnussen, who said earlier, you just watch it. And if you're not entertained, then don't watch it, you know. I find it exhausting watching these games. Just to me, so people keep making reference to the Seinfeld episode where Jerry goes into the office and starts heckling that woman who had heckled him, and that's what Kyrgios was alluding to, saying, "Oh, I don't go to supermarkets and boo people when they're scanning items." To me, that suggests someone's a little bit unhinged. If that's where, as an athlete, their brain's at. And that's probably why he struggled to beat a wild card that he probably should have beaten in three sets. That's why he probably took five. He was into his players' box, like all the way through the game. He was into the crowd, spitting at the crowd. Whether he gets a sanction or not for that remains to be seen. He's saying he doesn't want the line judge there. He's being ageist by taking on their age. He ticked
all boxes, really.
He did. It was, how do you keep that up for more than 1 week in a Grand Slam tournament? Like, let alone trying to go the whole way and win something. And I reckon this is what Nick Kyrgios' career is going to be. Round one, round two, maybe round three in Grand Slams where it's all theatrics and interesting to watch. But that's about as far as his temperament's going to let him go. And, you know, when it's all over and, you know, in the course of history, we'll say, you know, who was that? Remember that Nick Kyrgios guy? He was a volatile character. But we're not going to think of him as a tennis champion. And I don't think he cares. I just see a really troubled athlete. And I'm not trying to be... I'm not making excuses for him at all. This whole line about how much, like all the burden of social media, mate, get off it.
Get off it.
Just don't look at it. And I'm as guilty of it as anyone. Like I go in and out of looking at social media and the hate, and it would be nothing compared to what Kyrgios obviously has to put up with the millions of people who follow him. But if it's that much head noise, don't just shut it out. Delete it. Block it. Block numbers. That's what I do with certain people if I don't want them in my life, in my head. Lock them out.
Plenty of athletes who use the siege mentality. And if you want to look, you don't have to look too far in the world of tennis. And Leighton Hewitt was one of the best at it. He used to get to the Australian Open in particular and 100%. Go siege mentality. But the difference here is, and so when Nick Kyrgios is going off at his player's box and all that kind of stuff, and he's trying to pick fights left, right and centre, fine, go for it. If that's what you need to get up for a match that you're struggling in, then it's been used before. But the difference with Kyrgios, to your point, and he'll probably bow out in round two or three, is that Leighton would use it more often than not to his advantage and go off the back and have success off the back of that, and made a very successful career out of doing that.
Win Grand Slams, constantly at number one for weeks and weeks and months and months and months. Kyrgios doesn't have that sort of... doesn't have that mental fortitude at all to go beyond just being a bit of a sideshow for a couple of matches here or there. And then he'll tell us how good he is and how good he is on grass and how many of these top players that that he's beaten. And, mate, nobody cares, Nick. They don't care because you're not winning tournaments.
He thinks that they only care to be there to watch him. In fact, he said that last night. He said all these spectators came to see a full stadium with Nick Kyrgios and my opponent. That's what he said, Nick Kyrgios and my opponent. And he said about the snitch comment, because he accused the line judge of being a snitch, she found it relevant to go to run to the umpire at 30 love and make it about her. No one was there to see her today, factually. So he's got it in his head that everybody's there just to see him. He didn't even name his opponent. And then he's got the disrespect factor going on. I agree with you. I see somebody who's troubled there and somebody who cannot harness what so many have done before him, which is get yourself into a fight so you can, you know, you can use that anger to win the match that you're playing. He just hasn't ticked. He hasn't worked that one out. That's the part that he doesn't get.
I agree. I just see a really insecure, troubled player who's just so volatile from match to match. I get anxious watching him, I've got to say. I just feel there's a real anxiety around. People call it exciting and different, and I also think he's a bit of a bully, for sure. I think he's very good at bullying, one, the officials, two, his opponent, but also the crowd in terms of, like, it's all right for the crowd to be like a football match when it's elevating him and getting him up like it does at the Australian Open. That's all well and good, but when the crowd's not completely... partisan and on his side, that's when he starts lashing out with him. So I think he really took exception to someone saying, Kyrgios, you're shit. Mate, if you can't cop that from a crowd, even at Wimbledon, even in a tennis match, then, you know, you need to probably get a thicker skin if you're going to be a professional athlete.
Yeah, the show rolls on because he continues on through there. It's interesting, just on a final note on that, yesterday when we go back to what the missile was saying, I was actually prepared to try and look at Nick Kyrgios's matches through a different lens, through a, you know, okay, if you don't want to take him seriously, don't, but just enjoy the entertainment ride. So I was prepared to do that, and then I see what unfolds and the way that he's taken the fight out to the spectators in particular, and the way that he's carried on again, and the bizarre comments around social media. I'm kind of back to square one with him on that one. Let's go to Clubland. The West Tigers miss out on Cameron Serraldo. They made the statement themselves, which was weird in itself, and now we don't know which way they're going to go. So they've missed out on their number one man. What does that do for the recruitment process going forward?
Only the West Tigers can make it so clear that they're going after Cameron Serraldo, throw a 5-year deal at him, a stack of money, and then when it says put all their eggs in that one basket, and then when it doesn't happen, put out a press release, and then all of a sudden we see reports that Brett Camorley, the interim coach, is the P for the job. It's hardly a long, exhausting search. And it's so typical of the Tigers for it to play out so publicly, the way that it has. The noise around Luke Brooks and what's happening with him, you know, is not healthy. As we know, he's going to play this weekend. I don't know where the West Tigers turn. There's a lot of talk about John Morris, who's currently an assistant to Jason Demetrio at Souths, possibly in the mix. John Morris has got a close relationship with Tim Sheens. I don't know. Johnny Morris didn't a great coach or a strong coach, but he didn't really handle the outside noise that was at Cronulla particularly well. How would he handle the outside noise around the West Tigers? That's a big question mark. I think it's a really experienced, it's a job for an experienced coach. If not Serrato, then it's got to be someone like a Paul Green or a Shane Flanagan. I actually think Flanagan's probably the better option for them out of the lot, of all the coaches that are out there. Unless Christian Wolf, who's knocked back the Warriors job, might be interested. But you need someone who's very, very tough. And the way things have played out in their search for a coach just shows you why that's the case.
So what do they do when they've got a prospective coach in front of them next time around? Do they throw another 5-year deal out there, or was that a Cameron Serraldo only?
I think so. That's how desperate they were to get him, by throwing that amount of money and that amount of time to a coach who is hugely regarded, but let's just remember, and more than an assistant coach, because he's basically been like a co-coach there under or alongside Ivan Cleary for the last few years. So he's gone beyond just the assistant coach, but he's still untried as a head coach in the NRL. So it just, to me, that just showed you the desperation of the Tigers to try and get him. But I don't think 5 years is smart at all. I think that's way too long.
And Luke Brooks, you mentioned him, so he's named in the side after reporting, was being reported last week that he was going to be dropped for the first time in his career. And in the Sydney Morning Herald today, reports that Benji Marshall's going to be helping out Luke Brooks. So where's he at here? Because I find this an interesting matchup this weekend, Webby, and I said it at the top of the program there. The Warriors go home for the first time in forever. They're going to have a massive crowd. And can you imagine if they can't win there, they're going to struggle to win anything for the rest of the year. If the Tigers have a shocker and Luke Brooks doesn't perform, all the questions go back on them again. It's lose-lose for both of them here.
Well, they missed the June 30 deadline. So in terms of possibly letting you move to another club. There was a lot of talk around last week about Newcastle being interested again in him and trying to get him early, but that doesn't seem to be coming to fruition. I'm glad Benji's getting involved with Luke Brooks, but I would have thought Luke Brooks could dig himself out of the hole himself. He's not like he's a rookie halfback. He's been around for 10 years or so now. He should be firing. I don't like the fact that Luke Brooks is always a scapegoat for the Tigers, but the halfback always wears the criticism, don't they?
Yes, exactly. A couple of points on the text line. A Rooster Man says, Webby, you are spot on with Nick Kyrgios, and also fried chicken 100%. Webby is a boss, says John. So you've got yourself a backing for your KFC hangover cure.
Well, I've got some news for Rooster Man.
Yes.
Matt Lodge.
That's right.
He's coming.
He is coming? So I'm
pretty sure it's
right.
all but confirmed. It'll be for 6 games. And apparently the NRL have all but confirmed it as well. I don't know if the suggestion that Lodge had to go in the cap at $20,000 a game is correct. I think it's less than that. But it's $100,000 for 6 matches. I don't think Lodge will be there for every game, but he's just the insurance and the backup that they need in the forwards, the Chooks, in the second half of the season. So I think they were actually entertaining trying to sign him several years ago, and they weren't particularly impressed with what they saw. But things are different this time around, and he's a handy acquisition for the Roosters down the stretch of the season. I can't pick the Roosters. I don't know whether they're in the top eight. I don't know if they're out of the top eight. I thought the way they played against the Storm in a losing team, if Tupanua latches on and scores that try, things turn around. But then after what happened against Parramatta, who would know? Flick a coin.
Andrew from Newcastle has tied the two subjects together perfectly. I'd love to see a charity boxing event with the headline act, Nick Kyrgios v. Matthew Lodge. So there you go. That'll sort a few people out. Now, before we let you go, let's get your tips for round 16 this weekend. So it starts with the Battle of Brookie on Thursday night, Seagulls v. Storm.
Storm just
in that one. No, Cameron Munster. Knights have the Titans on Friday night in Newcastle. 12th versus last.
What a ding-dong battle this is going to be. Can't wait to watch it with a big bucket of KFC in front of me. Titans?
Titans for that one. Panthers, Roosters?
The Panthers.
Panthers. I'll be calling Saturday afternoon from CommBank, the Bulldogs and Sharks.
Interesting game. I think the Sharks, but it's much closer than the market suggests. You heard it here first, unless it doesn't happen.
Markets say $1.37 for the Sharks, $3.10 for the Doggies. Gamble responsibly. Cowboys v. Broncos on Saturday afternoon.
Broncos is in an upset.
Broncos in an upset in Townsville as well. Rabbitohs against the Eels. Latrell is back.
I'm going to take Parramatta. Now, apparently, Cody Walker is like a new man with Latrell back at training and on the training paddock. So I expect them to be better South, but I still think Parramatta, after the way they played against the Roosters, flying again.
Okay, Eels flying in. Warriors v. West Tigers, what happens over there?
I think the Warriors are morals.
I think they're morals as well. Dragons against the Raiders, the final game at Wynn Stadium.
Please. Dragons.
Oh, I thought you were going to change your way. I'll be catching up with Andrew McCulloch a little bit later on.
I need to change my ways in many ways, Matthew.
Don't change, Webby. We love you just the way you are. Good on you, mate. Have a great week.
Good on you.